Hello, everyone. It's Paul D'Souza from Sightline Wealth Management. And today I have Aaron Edgar from Edgar Chan Law. And this is a series of our interviews with our service professionals, which we have as part of our Sightline Wealth Management platform, where we bring in outside experts to collaborate on client files and bring you best-in-class service and professional services as well. So, Aaron, how are you? How have you been?
Pretty good. Thanks, Paul.
Very good. Maybe just for listeners who are not familiar with you and your firm, do you mind just giving a bit of a background of yourself and the firm?
Yeah, sure. So we're a boutique estate planning firm. It's me and my partner. We're both Bay Street trained lawyers. We practice on Bay Street for about 6 to 7 years, and we've been running our firm now for about 7 years. We're practicing mainly on estate planning, so preparing wills, powers of attorney for clients, as well as doing trust planning and other estate planning type transactions for them.
Oh, excellent. And I know when we had you and your partner in our office about a year ago, we had a full house of a presentation, and it was interesting. We had some individuals, I think, have used a real estate lawyer to do their wills because the name estate is in there. So maybe if you impress upon the importance of using a specialist rather, say, a generalist or even the do-it-yourself wills.
Yeah, so some people think about, you know, I need to get a will, and they think that's all they need. I think they have the document, you know, that's what it is. But what they really need is advice around that. So sometimes if you're not dealing with a specialist, you're dealing with that real estate lawyer who throws in the will with their closing, is, you know, they're getting that document, but maybe they didn't get any advice. And maybe the plan is their general form will that they kind of filled out for the client, but maybe it doesn't really suit them. And it may even have, you know, some issues for them, you know, in our errors and omission insurer, you know, wills and estates is the areas that's the highest rate of legal errors made by a lawyer, just because there's so many people who kind of dabble in wills and estates. They think it's easy, but it's one of the more, I think, challenging areas of law, because it intersects with so many other different areas like family law. You have to know tax law. You need to know all those different pieces and how they fit together. So if you don't know that, you may not get a plan that fits you. And what that could mean is, you know, it's tax inefficient, or it's not really protecting your family the way you thought it would, or the way you would want it to.
Makes sense. Do you have any experiences in terms of seeing a do-it-yourself will or a will done by a generalist that you can share?
Yeah, I mean, some of the common mistakes that we see is really when it comes to drafting trusts for minors, you know, drafting trusts for their children. So a lot of lawyers aren't comfortable with drafting trusts, and, you know, they'll make a lot of mistakes. And, you know, the common one I see made is where they're just changing their age 18 trust, and they put a different age in, and they think, you know, that works. But what the law actually says is that child can basically call for that money at any time when they're over the age of majority. So that's one of the major mistakes we see with a lot of, I guess, generalists trying to practice estate laws when they try to prepare trusts for minors.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, Aaron. And during our meeting with our clients, I know a topic of discussion was powers of attorney and how that's a living document in the wrong hands that actually could be quite dangerous. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so a lot of people misunderstand, or they think a power of attorney is a springing document. It only comes into effect when you don't have capacity, when you can't make decisions for yourself. But the law in Ontario says that you have a power of attorney. It's usually a continuing power of attorney. It means it's effective the day you sign it, which means it can be used the day after you sign it to manage your assets for you, and it continues through incapacity. So that means if you do a power of attorney and it's in the wrong person's hands, they could use that power of attorney to deal with your assets. Usually the risk isn't that high, because most banks or real estate lawyers are very, very cautious. They don't just take a power of attorney for granted. They want to make sure that the grantor is actually given the attorney, or the person's actually incapacitated.
I see. Makes sense. Okay. And in terms of COVID-19, a topical question here, how has that impacted the estate planning field industry, and has it, and if yes, how?
One of the major requirements, the most important thing when you sign a will, is that it has to be witnessed properly. So in the environment of COVID-19, it can be very difficult to sign a will and have physical distancing. So you need to have two witnesses present and see you sign the document. So when COVID-19 first struck, you know, we were all kind of struggling. How do we do this? You know, we're wearing gloves and masks. We're dealing with signings outside or through a window. So we were trying to interpret, what does that presence mean? How can we do it and still stay safe for everyone? The government's also kind of changed the rules. So they changed it once to say you can do this witnessing virtually. So it means you can kind of have a document. You see each person signing it on a screen. That was very, very difficult because it had to be one document that got passed around to everybody. So the Ontario government passed further legislation now into the emergency order to say you can do that in counterparts. So that means you can have everyone has the same copy of the document, or substantially the same, and they're all watching each other sign and execute the document over a video conference. So that's been, I guess, the biggest change to the profession has been the rules and people working around how do we actually do that. But you know what? We haven't actually had a client that has wanted to proceed in that manner yet. We've always offered them that option to come in and sign in person if they feel it's safe, or for us to send the documents out to them with a thorough checklist. But you know, the majority of people are coming in person. You know, we're wearing gloves and masks and still trying to keep our distance and do things quickly. But that's been the biggest challenge. It's kind of changed our processes a bit as well. It used to be when we would draft the documents, we send them to the clients, you know, fix any issues, then we kind of meet together, review the documents, then sign them. Now we want to kind of keep that signing meeting short, so we're reviewing again by a video conference with clients before we sign, just to keep that last signing meeting very short and to the point.
Yes, sounds like every industry has had to adapt in some sort of manner. Interesting. In terms of dying without a will, what are the consequences of that, other than a massive amount of uncertainty and probably bickering amongst potential heirs?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big things are increases cost in terms of applying for probate, and the other big thing is increases delay. So it can take much longer. And when you have a will, the executor kind of has authority to make some sort of decisions or make decisions related to the estate. When you don't have a will, there's no one who has that authority until the court actually grants probate. So that delay in granting probate means there's kind of that uncertainty in like who can make decisions on behalf of the estate. The court hasn't granted probate yet. So that can result in problems sometimes, like mortgages that don't get paid, and you know, other assets that can't be dealt with that can get damaged potentially as part of the estate.
On average, how long would that court process take?
You know, normally it takes 6 months to get probate. That's in downtown Toronto, so in the outskirts, it's a little bit quicker. But I mean, that's been another big change with COVID is the court, I think, has been a much slower in issuing probate applications. So I think a lot of them are working remotely, so it's a little bit more difficult in terms of you know, filing, getting the court to work on the file and get it out quickly. Right. So there's been delays in that sense.
Aaron, a common question with clients is if there's inconsistent information in terms of beneficiaries on, say, investment applications, insurance policies, and then a will, which has priority?
Yeah, so if they're all dealing with the same policy, so if they're all dealing with the same insurance policy versus, you know, what does the insurance policy form say? What does the will say? It's going to be the last designation that's made that's in effect. So it's always important we deal with clients sometimes we're doing insurance trusts or insurance designations in the will, and we make sure they understand that it's, you know, the last made designation. Don't go back to your insurance company and tell them you want to change or do anything, because it'll undo the work we've done for them in the will. So it's very, very important that they understand it's the last designation that they've made. You know, designations can change when you move different institutions, right? So, you did the designation in your RRSP in 2019, but then you set up your new account with Sightline in 2020. Well, you may have to redo your designations in your will if you had trusts or things like that. So that might be a reason why you review those designations or review your estate plans if you're moving accounts.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts to this. I know as I meet with clients, I ask the question if they've had the will and power of attorney is up to date. And so, yeah, we did that about 10 years ago or maybe 5 years ago. But as I can see here that there's a lot of moving parts that could potentially at least call for the review of the will just to make sure everything's in order. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in terms of probate fees, I know this is an important consideration, and I know many people spend an inordinate amount of time and money trying to avoid it. But is there any cases where actually doesn't make sense and the best course of action is to actually not set things up so that you're saving on probate fees?
Yeah, I mean, some people, you know, they work too hard to save probate fees. Probate fees aren't a big tax in the grand scheme of things, right? It's 1.5% of the value of the estate. So if you're doing things to incur income tax or you're not doing things that are income tax efficient, then, you know, saving probate fees may not be the biggest priority if you're going to pay more in income tax. Some people also do a lot of joint asset planning. They think they're doing smart things by putting assets joint with their children. But when they do those things, they're not considering, what happens if there's a creditor after, one of my children is on joint with the property.
Right.
What if my son doesn't want me to sell the house? He thinks that's his. He now has control in terms of how the house is dealt with, right? How it's transferred. So probate fees is one concern, but it has to come from a holistic view in terms of to save probate fees. The other things have to make sense in terms of income taxes and creditors, loss of control, right?
Makes sense. Yeah. So I've seen a lot of that occur. And in terms of clients in your practice at this time, what sorts of planning are you doing? What are you focusing on?
Yeah. So I'd say, the majority of our work is still the same as it's been. It's, preparing wills and powers of attorney for people. There's been a little bit more urgency for some people. Some people are a little more, more fearful, but other than that, the work has been, pretty much the same work we've always been doing. I think there's more stuff on the horizon now because the prescribed rate loan rate is going to drop again in probably July 1st, I think it is. And so that might kind of push more work into doing more of these like spousal loans or doing family trusts where clients are trying to, avoid the attribution rule so that a spouse or family member can invest money and have that incurred in their name using the prescribed rate loan plans.
Yes, exactly. And lastly, so any closing thoughts, or maybe if there's anything we discussed that you want to reinforce that you'd like to conclude with at the audience?
I think, again, just to reiterate what you said, it's always good to work with a specialist. And, maybe if you've done your will and it's been a little while, now's as good a time as any when you have that time sitting at home during COVID is to maybe pull it out and look at it and see if it still makes sense. If, if the people you've appointed are still able to do the role, if it's time to revisit the plan. So I think now that you have the time during COVID, it's a good time to look at your estate plan and see if it still makes sense. And if you are going to update it, to consider using a specialist.
Excellent. That's wise advice. All right. Thanks for your time, Aaron. We'll certainly have you back again, and we'll maybe delve into a few parts of estate planning that that our investors or our clients should also be very aware of. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Paul. My pleasure.